This is the Culture Study Podcast, and I'm Ann Helen Peterson.
And I'm Andrew Sean Greer, the author of the novel Villa Coco.
And the author of two of my other favorite books. I have to start with Less because it's like my, it just is like surprising in all of these ways. I was absolutely bewitched by it. It's such a lovely novel. And I think anyone who loved Less or Less is Lost will absolutely love Villa Coco. So tell me about Villa Coco. I'm halfway through and I'm totally, totally in love with it. You say in like the letter that came with The Galley, you start out by talking about it as a certain type of book that you miss. So maybe you could start by saying that, talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, I wanted to write what I would call a charm novel, which is not like a comfort novel,
yes,
or but is something that just charms your pants off. You just want to stay in that world forever. That, yes, it is, you know, there can be terrible things that happen, but there is a sense of possibility and creativity, eccentricity, and like an absurdity to it that, yes, makes you want to stay there because you can laugh at things a little.
And the plot is inspired by a friendship that is in your real life, but is not this friendship. So can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yes, in 2005, I was invited to a writer's residency in rural Tuscany run by a baronessa who was then in her late 70s. Mm. And I was 34 or 35. And we've continued that friendship. I was the only one besides her nephew who went to her 90th birthday in Havana, Cuba. She turned 100 a few months ago. I just saw her 2 weeks ago for a big luncheon. And it's been one of the greatest friendships of my life to have this woman there.
When we were trying to come up with things that we wanted to talk to you about, I knew that I wanted to have you on the show. And we're like, okay, like we could talk about this, we could talk about this. But like at the heart of this book is intergenerational friendship. And I wouldn't say either one of us are like, oh my gosh, I only have intergenerational friendships. Like this is something that actually is somewhat new to me. But I also now recognize it as an essential part of my life. So, and I know that a lot of our listeners really want more intergenerational friendships and want to cherish them more and cultivate more of them. So we're going to talk about being friends with people who are older than you, people who are younger than you, difficulties in each. And as you said before we hit record, these are not easy questions, but they're going to be really interesting ones, I think.
So. I'm sure they will.
Okay, so we're going to jump right in. This first one comes from Jennifer, and it's going to let you talk a little bit more about Italy.
In my personal experience, intergenerational friendships seem much more common in other places than they are in the U.S., where they seem like the exception rather than the norm. Why do you think that is? Is it how much our social communities are built around school? How relatively uncommon it is to live in intergenerational households? Our culture's obsession with categorizing people by generation? And is it related at all to our culture's high level of acceptance of age gap romantic relationships? Though that's being questioned more now, too.
There's a lot here, but you...
There's a lot there.
I know. But you live, like, I mean, how do you describe, like, do you live both places? Do you live in the U.S. and Italy? Do you mostly live in Italy? How Italian do you feel?
I definitely, because people ask me, whether I'm moving one place or the other, mm, I say, no, I live in both places.
Yeah.
So although while I'm not Italian in any way, I definitely spend half my time there. And it is a challenge of my lifetime to speak in another language and live in a foreign culture.
What have you noticed about how intergenerational friendship works differently? Or just like intergenerational closeness even in Italy?
I mean, I think it's much more common. One obvious way, and this is a broad generalization, is that different generations will be in the same household, mm-hmm, for much longer. The young people will stay there into their, they graduate from their university at around 25. So they are not living on their own until later. Some, mm-hmm, stay until they get married. Older generations will move into the house or will come for, I know my husband's uncle, who's 96, I think, he comes every weekend for lunch. And that's just part of the life, mm-hmm, now, is that they sort of start to take care of him. That there definitely is an expectation you're taking care of the older generation. But also the older generation is out on the streets.
Yeah.
They're, you know,
yes.
they're out drinking till 11 or 12 too. They're at the dance things.
Yeah. This is a crucial point that I think is sometimes lost. Like people are like, oh, well, in these other cultures, you know, grandma's in the house. And I'm like, grandma is also a social person who has friends of all ages.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely, now it stands to reason the older friends that I have had would have young friends because I would have been one of them. Mm-hmm. I'm not a young friend anymore. I am to my 100-year-old friend.
Exactly.
But I think they realized that there was, you know, their own friend, they were losing their own friends their age. Mm. And so they needed new ones and you got to pick younger ones.
This is the thing about like why I like being friends with younger people is that I don't know everything that's happening in the world. That's not my task anymore, is to like understand what's cool and new. I need someone to show me. And like a 20-year-old is much more equipped to do that.
Absolutely. And I don't care about being humiliated by not knowing them.
Totally.
Or dancing badly. I don't care. So I'm like, show me the TikTok dance, you know? And yes. since I don't care about dignity, I'm totally, they're amused too.
And why do you think in the US though, that like our social communities, part of it I think is also that the US is so large, like physically, geographically large compared to a lot of countries, not all countries, right? But a lot of countries, the mobility, especially amongst college educated, middle class people, like we move further away. Whereas in Italy, like even if you move out of the place where you are exactly from, it's still much easier to get home.
Well, I think that there is in countries like Italy, there is because of the low salary rate.
Yep.
It's very hard to leave. You have to have this sort of access of like, oh, my aunt's apartment, she died, but it opened up so I can move in. Otherwise,
right.
you can't afford a place of your own. So you're a little limited by the possibilities of your family connections. In the US, we really stress the idea of making it on your own and encourage moving around
yep.
anywhere. The only thing that holds us back would be healthcare. Connected
yep.
to jobs,
right.
which they don't have.
Right.
But you look at a place like China, which is definitely larger, but I think that there are intergenerational, there's definitely people living in the home together.
Yeah, for sure. I also think that we work so much that there's not a lot of room for friendship or even just like, when you talk about like your partner's uncle coming every weekend for lunch, a lot of people I know would never be able to make that work, and not just because they're working all the time, but also because like they're traveling for their kids' soccer games or whatever. Like the rhythms of life do not accommodate these sorts of friendships as much.
Yeah. I mean, Italians sure work hard,
totally.
But there, I think what it takes is to actually see the value in that relationship,
mm-hmm.
which at least among people I know, either you got it or you don't. And like definitely my husband, he and I both, like any lady over 80, we are right next to her at the cocktail party. Because that is an interesting person. Just by definition, they've had more life.
Totally.
And that they're at the cocktail party. And the way they're dressed, you can tell that's who you want to be next to.
Mm-hmm.
And they always respond well to us. So it's also because I'm not at the cocktail party to make business connections or to meet a romantic. You know, I am there to get a good story.
Yeah.
And I can sense who has a good story.
What was it like when you first met your Baronessa? Were you like, am I supposed to be friends with her? Like, what is the relationship here? Is it a mentorship relationship? What was it like?
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure. Like my character in Villa Coco, he is unsure even what his job is.
Yes.
And he is at one point, he says, should I admit it? I was terrified of her. And I can't quite remember being terrified of her, of Beatrice, now, but I'm sure I was, because she made it clear constantly how little I knew about history, the
mm-hmm.
history of art, about speaking other languages, about global literature, not just English language literature, about how to dress, about what was appropriate to say at dinner. And I had to learn all of those things.
Yes. You were bringing up a memory for me. So I studied abroad in France, in Nantes, France, when I was during my junior mm-hmm. year in college. And I lived with a madame d'un certain âge, which is like a nice way of saying what we call now like an older lady, right? And she was at the time in her 70s and was one of the few host families. This was like early 2000s, one of the few host families who was willing to host gay men. And all of her, like all of the people that had lived with her previously, almost all of them had been like gay men's male students. So she was very like, didn't know what to do with me. She's like, what? but she corrected, like I would leave her a note, like I'm going to miss dinner tonight or something. And she would like correct my French. She would, I mean, just regale me with stories. I learned so much just by the fact that it was just me and her at dinner every single night, like how to think about a simple French meal, how to peel like a piece of fruit using one knife and like have all of the peel come off in one long string, like so many things. But I also like, I think about that experience now, I learned so much more French than my peers who were with families, because the families, they weren't like paying attention to her. They were like, whatever, there's another kid at the table. Like, they're not that interesting. But I had to sit and have these conversations. And I was terrified. Absolutely. And, like, I still think of her now. I'm sure she has passed. But, like, we wrote letters for, a year afterwards. Just, like, old school letters. And she corrected my French still. And it was a really, really important and influential relationship on me.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that.
I know. we've got a handful of questions about seeking advice about building and maintaining these friendships. I like the tip of like finding the oldest person at the cocktail party because you know that they're going to have a story, but we'll have some more. So let's hear from Joy.
I attend a crafting group once a month and a sewing guild once a month. I've loved attending these groups and sparking conversations. I learn from these women and enjoy contributing. But I'm struggling on how to interact and engage with these fresh friendships outside of a monthly meetup. It feels far more difficult since we don't really text, and it's hard to invite someone out in front of a group of other people. Do you have any tips on how to convert these structured intergenerational times into a more formal or informal, genuine friendship?
So I love this. I think everyone in this group would be like totally honored if someone like Joy was like, hey, do you want to like go get coffee sometime?
What comes to mind is for all of my friends who are much older than me is that I've always tried to meet them on their terms.
Yes.
And not set up anything like, hey, I have a little time between here and here. Can you come over? I mean, that's not going to be easy for them.
No.
So you have to go to them in some way. Now, what I think she's talking about is how can you invite one person in front of all these other people? Mm. And I think that's hard to say. I'm trying to, because I'm actually pretty good in social situations. I don't upset other people.
Yeah.
I might say, can I have everyone's phone number? Because I'd and is anyone free on Tuesday for a coffee? I can only meet one person at a time. You know, something so it's clear you're trying to meet them all, unless you are trying to meet just the one person.
Yeah.
In which case you have to, you know, buttonhole them or whatever it's called.
Get totally. Them in a corner. Buttonhole. I think that that's a great idea. And also, maybe you're like, hey, does someone want to hang out like outside of crafting time? I'm going to be at this coffee shop at this time, like on Tuesday. Who wants to come? And then some people will be able to come and some people won't. And then maybe like there doesn't seem to be like a preference in this question of like, I only like this cool one, right? Like she kind of just wants to get to know any or all of them. And I think that could work.
And I think the open-mindedness of the question is what's going to make it happen. Because I have gone to meet new friends at their retirement homes, yep. You know, where they have a good cook. And, you know, you just have to be willing to travel to them or just think a little bit about mobility or energy or habits.
Yeah. The other thing that this made me think of is I think that sometimes older people think of younger people as constantly busy. And if you say something that contributes to that understanding where you're like, oh, well, I'm so busy. I can only make this time work. Could you make this time possibly work? Instead being like, here's a time that I'm available. Could I like, is there a place where I could come meet you? Like, is there a coffee shop close to your house that you like? Like you said, really trying to make it fit with their schedule is really awesome.
Yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by Ollie. Melody, do you know how many beds I have for myself?
I would assume one.
Yes, I have one bed for myself. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many beds that my dogs have?
Ooh. I'm going to say at least three.
Four. Mm-hmm. Four. I just got a new one because mm-hmm. I was just like, they probably need another bed in this room or like a space for them.
I could definitely see one bed per dog per room. That would be totally reasonable.
The thing about our dogs is that they are spoiled and we want to give them the best. And it's not, you know, it's not because we don't have kids. Like, it's just because we love our dogs very, very much. And if anyone else understands what it's like to be obsessed with your dogs the way that we're obsessed with our dogs, it's Ollie. They are totally relentless about delivering the best food and experience for you and your dog. And they give you a way to check in on their health over and over and over again if you are as obsessive as we are. Ollie's fresh recipes are developed by real chefs and backed by vet nutritionists. They're obsessed with making the best meals with the highest quality ingredients. From the moment you start your subscription, everything is tailored just for your pup. Their meals are perfectly portioned and you get this very cute little puptainer so that however much you use per meal, if you have a big dog or a small dog that only takes like a little bit, you can take the leftovers and put them in a very not gross container. It's very useful. And with Ollie, you don't just get food. Through their app, you can actually check in on your dog's health with real vets. You upload a picture and their team can check in on your dog's weight, digestion, teeth, and coat. Get ready for both you and your pup to be as obsessed with Ollie as our dogs are. Head to ollie.com/culture, tell them all about your dog, and use code culture to get 70% off your welcome kit when you subscribe today. Plus, they offer an obsession guarantee. If you're not completely obsessed, you'll get your money back. That's ollie.com/culture and enter code culture to get 70% off your first box. Ollie, feed the obsession. Today's episode is brought to you by Blissey. So I just wrote in the newsletter a little bit about like how when I first get my hair highlighted, I'm like, oh, I am in my best self. Like nothing is better than like the first 2 weeks after I get it highlighted. And I've interrogated this a little bit, but during those first 2 weeks especially, I'm like, or even just when I just get my hair cut, I'm like, I do not want to mess with this haircut in any way. I don't want any split ends. I don't want my hair getting frizzy. And the best way to do that is to use a Blissey pillowcase. Blissey is a silk pillowcase that's cooling, gentle, and made to make skin and hair look better fast. You get healthier skin in weeks, you get better hair, reduces frizz, breakage, and preserves your style and color. It's much better than satin because silk is natural, cooling, and gentler on skin and hair. It's also super easy to take care of, fully machine washable, and available in 100 colors to go with whatever style you have going on. It's also a great gift for the person in your life who seems to have like every luxury. And you're like, oh, you know what I'm going to get you? A really awesome pillowcase. Because you're a listener, Blissey is offering 60 nights risk-free plus an additional 30% off when you shop at blissey.com/culturepod. That's blissy.com/culturepod and use code culturepod to get an additional 30% off. Your skin and hair will thank you. Okay, next up is from Donna, who has a similar question, but it's about keeping up a work friendship without the work.
My work BFF is 35 and I'm 56. We've been friends for almost 10 years. We talk every day and are a big part of each other's lives. Due to our schedules, we only see each other in person a few times a year, and he has kids and I don't, so our schedules and availability are very different. I'm thinking of retiring because I'm pretty sure Mary Oliver would agree that this job is not how I should spend what's left of my one wild and precious life. How can I prioritize a relationship that's important to me when we won't have work in common?
All right. I think you have some experience with keeping friendships alive when you're not present. So what are your thoughts here?
It's interesting because now we're talking about, I am now older than this questioner. So we're talking about having a friendship with someone younger who's, as you said, seen as busy and having no time. Mm-hmm. And I do, because I live in two places, I know that when I am with my friends, I really need to be present and pay attention and not let time pass.
Yeah.
But luckily, they already have two habits, one of talking every day and the other one of only seeing each other a couple times a year. I don't see any reason why any of that has to change.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like the, you know, just change the way that you communicate from whatever your work like chat function is to texting. And even if you're not, like, find something else that you like to gossip about, because whatever there was, I'm certain like if they become friends, there's something that they like gossiped about to do with the structure of work. So what is another thing that you can kind of like talk shit about or talk, you know, talk about lovingly maybe? And then I'm guessing too that the reason that they would see each other a few times a year was for like a work event, right? Or a retreat or something like that. You can still, like, Donna can still go to this person's city and be like, hey, do you want to hang out tonight? Like, let's go to a baseball game. Let's go to dinner. Have your kids come too. Like, there's so many ways that you can go and do that.
I mean, I have no work friends because I'm all alone, but I certainly have friends who have had work friends in our friend circle where the job is long gone, but the friends are still here 20 years later, even ones who have kids. And it's because they're getting something out of it from you.
Yes.
And you have to just count on that fact and not be insecure. Like, why would they want to hang out with an old guy like me? Apparently they do.
Yeah.
So in the way I want to hang out with my 100-year-old friend, mm-hmm. and I'm willing to travel to do it. And if it changes, it changes. But, you know, I think give him a chance to be that he wants to continue it too.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, next up is Katie. She's seeking some very practical and relatable advice.
As a Gen Z born in 2003, I kind of struggle connecting with older generation. In general, I have an easy time talking to them since I grew up surrounded by friends of my parents and kind of always talked to those people. But now through my university sports program, I joined a group of 50 to 60 year olds and I'm meeting them once a week and doing fitness. And sometimes I find it hard to find things to talk about with them. We're in such different times in our lives and I feel like there's a big divide there in some cases. Do you have any advice?
First of all, I love that this person was was born the year that I was talking about studying abroad in France.
Yes.
and I also love that this person joined a fitness group that's with a ton of 50 and 60 year olds. What do you remember? So you were 25, right? When you first like developed your friendship. What are you?
35.
Okay. Yes. Well, let's go backwards to our 20s. What do you have? Like, I do remember this.
I still was making friends with older people, but I think I don't want to be friends with every 80-year-old out there.
True.
Right?
Yes.
So that it's just actually very particular 80-year-olds because I feel like, you know, I don't like the idea of generations, Gen X, Gen. I just find those super limiting because I'm not like a slacker, you know, indie rocker or anything like that. I'm like an arty gay guy who feels like he doesn't belong. Mm-hmm. And that feeling of not belonging is in older people too, especially weird, arty older people. Those are the ones I talk to because we have something in common, not belonging. And they can show me how to belong and like other or weird, arty movies I need to watch or things like that. So I will say that given a group of not random, but self-chosen workout partners, I might not automatically connect with them all.
Mm-hmm.
The way I definitely don't with any age group.
Yeah, agreed. And that, like, I think sometimes we need that permission. It's like, you're not going to like everyone on your dorm floor, or you're not going to like everyone that you work with or connect with, right? Like, vibe with. Find, like, an old person interest of your own, whatever that might be. And that can be a topic of conversation that allows you to then bridge into other things that are more interesting. So for me, it was classic Hollywood. Like, I was able to talk about the different stars that I loved, and like, they had memories of those stars and what they thought about them, like, who, like, which of their movies I hadn't seen yet that I should absolutely see. Like, that was a great point of connection.
I mean, I think you touch on the main thing, which is ask questions.
Yes.
And be curious. And you have to actually be curious about this person and assume they have some incredible thing. I certainly know, you know, in my novel, he's asking her questions about her past, and she has these ridiculous, clearly somewhat invented stories to tell him. But she also has hidden in there, there's going to be some kind of wisdom eventually. And I found that with my older friends that if I'm curious about, like you said, old Hollywood, or what Italian movies should I watch? What Italian books should I be reading? They have a lot to tell you. And then not digging too personally, though, I think.
Yeah. I also think at first, like, I like that Katie's like, it feels like there's a big divide in some cases. And part of that is that some of the main things in her life, like how romance works or how school works or how the job market works, there is a real, real difference between when they were her age. And I think sometimes there's this tendency to try to be like, well, when I was your age, this is how I felt. So any way that you can avoid the conversation going that route, I think is excellent.
Yeah, it's fun just to hear, to get stories out of people mostly. Yeah. And I think for everyone involved to have a sense of humor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I certainly, if I am a 56-year-old guy who still isn't over that thing that my friend said to me when we were 15 and I tell it like this, that is not someone you want to hang out with. Because I, come on, get over it, dude. It's been 40 years. So I need to be able to tell those stories to younger people in a funny way that they might connect to.
Totally.
Instead of just getting something off my chest.
There is totally, in this group of 50 and 60-year-olds, there is someone who is a great storyteller. And I think that I'm going to encourage Katie to find that person. Okay.
Yeah, go Katie. Good for you.
Next question is also from Katie. Different Katie. It's about making friends in the other direction.
I'm 37, and I'd love advice on making friends with people younger than me. I live in a university town, so I'm surrounded by smart, interesting younger people. But when we hang out, the dynamic doesn't quite feel balanced. Even those who are only a few years younger than me often slip into a polite talking to an elder mode, or they start asking me for advice about taxes or insurance like I'm an older sister. I notice that I'm the one asking most of the questions, doing the conversational legwork, and trying to keep things reciprocal, but it doesn't feel like two peers relating to one another. I have close friendships with people who are significantly older than me, and those feel genuinely mutual with a real give and take in terms of curiosity and vulnerability. So am I just doing something wrong? Maybe I seem intimidating and have no idea. Or is there an inevitable lag where these friendships can only become more natural as younger people move through certain life stages? Feel free to tell me. I just need to be more patient.
Okay, so we got a ton of questions in this vein about being friends with younger people. So I would love to hear your thoughts here and talk about any younger friendships that you do have that work.
I find it more challenging, but maybe that's because I usually meet older people because they've invited a group of young people over, you know? They've managed to, I know that when I first got to San Francisco, the writer Amy Tan, who I do not think of as an older person, but I guess must be, invited me over for dinner, even though she didn't know anything about me or my writing, just because she wanted new people around.
Yeah.
And so I will say that Amy picked the right person because I was curious about her and her life, and she's so fantastic and vibrant. And I think that's what you want in young people, is their vibrancy. Now, maybe this group of people doesn't seem as curious. There might, again, it's not going to be everyone.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be someone who needs something from an older generation who I think is open-minded enough and curious and open to the world rather than a little closed in the box of their generation, or who simply a little doesn't quite belong and needs that outreach. And that's the person in the other direction you need to find. Now, if they're not asking questions, then I don't think they're the right person.
Yeah.
Because they should be finding things out from you.
I also think, like, it's okay if they ask you for advice on taxes or insurance. Like, that's an opportunity for you to offer wisdom and then also to be goofy and change it into another topic, right? Like, that's a way of building intimacy.
Yeah, have a good tax story.
Totally.
You know, totally. You'll develop them. I do think, like, what I do, because I my husband keeps reminding me, he's like, your friend group, you think of yourselves as young, but you are not young. You need to meet younger writers. And so he's actually good at finding them because he's a part of his job is being a critic for an Italian newspaper, a book critic. So, but luckily I like to throw parties. And so I will have these people I don't really know over to the party. And they're so happy to be there because it's a different situation. They're entering the group the same way I entered Amy Tan's group. You know, it's, you feel part of a world that you were outside before. And so they're so fun to have around. They're delighted. They'll dance up a storm and they'll be, then they'll write a thank you letter.
Well, and this, sometimes when you're older, right, you have the practice and maybe the means to have like a cool party. Like you have space to, and enough silverware to have eight people over, right? Like you can have that infrastructure in place and then younger people can come and you just set it up to make it more fun. I love this question though. I do think that like, it is a lovely service to provide wisdom in all of its forms and also to provide like space to meet young people and have that energy come into your lives. Like it's maybe I guess Katie's feeling like she wants more of the energy and less of the like respect and wisdom seeking, but it could get there.
It could get there because I mean, I think many people I know who are thoughtful as we get older, we still feel in some way young and, you know, full of life and energy. And maybe some people among our peers have kind of petered out in some way that doesn't interest us or scares us. I think it's such a smart remark to say that we have resources, whether it's money or your best friends of the guy at the door at the club because you dated him 20 years ago. All those things, we have those resources that they don't have. And it's not like to lay a trap for young people. It's to give them freely. And they, those are things that they would love from us.
Yeah.
You know, I think my 100-year-old friend, she invited people to her villa in Tuscany, you know?
Yeah.
Another older friend in Italy, he brought me slippers back from Venice that he said were exactly what I should be wearing. And I didn't know anything about any of that. And it was generosity that brought me in because they had the resources.
You know, another resource that I think younger people and older people have is time. And when people around my age, so I'm 45, like if you don't have kids, I don't have kids. If someone doesn't have kids, they sometimes find their peer group very wrapped up in their kids and are like, well, they don't have a lot of time for me. And in those situations, I always say like, you need to find people of different ages and different life stages because you know who has a flexible schedule that they can hang out with me is a retired person.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say my friend group in San Francisco, at the top, it's 77. And at the bottom, I think we're adding some younger people.
You've recruited them?
It's still only down to like early 30s, maybe 30 is the youngest.
Yeah.
So, but that's a good span.
That's a great span.
And we meet every Friday for a beer. We're going to meet tomorrow. So like, and the 77-year-old always shows up. The 30-year-old always shows up. The 30-year-old then goes out dancing. And the 77-year-old crabs about it. But that's part of the fun, you know?
Yes.
Oliver, I hope you're listening.
The Culture Study Podcast is brought to you by Blue Land. So the island where I live just entered the 21st century, and we have, for the first time, single-stream recycling. So before, you had the three containers that you sorted everything. It was a real pain in the butt, but it also meant that you could just kind of like put another container out there with more recycling if you had more recycling. Now, if it doesn't fit in the thing, you're screwed. Like, you got to bring it into town or wait another 2 weeks to try to fit it in. So I am increasingly mindful about how much plastic and other recyclables, but plastic especially, that I like is just taking up space in my recycling. Something that's really helped with that is actually using Blueland, because instead of having to buy a new, an entire new thing of toilet cleaner, of detergent, of dishwasher fluid, of hand soap. So you have one really heavy duty like container, whether it's for like all of the little tablets, all the little toilet cleaner tablets, or for like your all-purpose spray. You refill it and you add water depending on which one you're using, and you don't have all of this extra plastic. Actually saves a lot of space in my relatively small recycling bin. Plus, using less plastic, just generally better. We can all agree on that. I've recently been loving the all-purpose spray. It has just like the slightest scent. It doesn't make it smell like you're in the doctor's office every time that you clean up your kitchen counter. Blueland is also a certified B Corp and Leaping Bunny cruelty-free certified. Their formulas are EPA Safer Choice certified, and many products have also earned Cradle to Cradle's Gold Material Health Certificate. Make the switch today. Get that plastic out of your recycling bin and get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/culture. That's blueland.com/culture. The Culture Study Podcast is brought to you by Lola Blankets. It's Junetober here in the Pacific Northwest. I'm actually not mad about it this year because now I just keep thinking about like, this is really good for my dahlias. But right now you can see Melody's looking at me on the video. I'm wearing a sweatshirt, jeans, and wool socks. But the thing is, if you aren't as aggressive in your Junetober dressing, like if you forget to put on your wool socks, you need a blanket. Like when I'm just sitting doing my work, I need a blanket on top of me. And you know what is the most comforting, also the most likely to bring the dogs to cuddle next to me, is my Lola blanket. It's so soft. And you know, it has like this heft to it that's not super heavy. Like it's not, they do make weighted blankets, but it's not the heft of a weighted blanket. That to me, it's just enough pressure to feel like very, very comfortable. Like last night we were having this big rainstorm. The temps were probably, I don't know, it was probably like 49 or something. And I got under my comforter and pulled up my Lola blanket. And I was like, I have never been happier in my life. Like I felt so comfortable and just read my romance and drifted off to sleep. It was wonderful. We cannot shut up about our Lola blankets. We've given them to so many people. Everyone in the house fights for them. I don't know how to say sufficient positive things about these blankets. Lola blankets are crafted with ultra soft luxury faux fur and a signature four-way stretch that sets it apart. They're also machine washable and double hemmed for durability. I have it in the large. Melody has it in the extra large. I wish that I would have gotten the extra large. I want to buy 17 more. And like I said before, they also make weighted blankets if you want to have even more of the calming therapeutic vibe. Right now, for a limited time, our listeners can get 40% off select Lola Blanket products with code CULTURE at checkout. Just head to lolablankets.com and use code CULTURE to get 40% off your order. After you purchase, they're going to ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and let them know that we sent you. Wrap yourself in luxury with Lola Blankets. Our next question about intergenerational friendships comes from Amy.
Are age gap friendships, where we are significantly younger than our friends, just ways to deal with our inner mother or father wounds?
Okay, what do you think here?
That could be for some people. I don't have inner mother father wounds. Not particularly. I don't feel it that way at all. This is my 100-year-old friend. She is not maternal towards me at all. It is friendship. Yeah.
Well, and that's something that I think is really important, is like having this person with wisdom who is not your parent, right? Does not have that like that type of directional relationship with you. It can just be really magical to be liberated from that sort of relationship.
I mean, maybe it's a sort of uncle aunt. If you didn't have a fabulous uncle or aunt, then they take the place of that. Because I mean, my aunt and uncle are fine, but they weren't very much in my life.
Right.
So I try to be the like crazy uncle to my nephews so that they can always come to me if that's the kind of person they need.
Totally. Well, and that's, I'm like an auntie to many, many different kids. And I always want to be like this example of a different way of living and like figuring out your life. But then also I want to be someone who has always been interested in them. And that to me is like, you know, we're not talking necessarily about being friends with kids, but like I think of my Like, I think of my friends' kids as my friends. Like, I actually like hanging out with them. I like asking them questions. Like, they are interesting to me. And hopefully that translates into something as they age as well.
I'm just thinking of a writer friends I know who have four kids who I've known since they were tiny. Mm. But we are friends. They yep. definitely see me that way.
Yep.
I'm interested in their lives, but not in the like, oh, I remember that age. I'm like, oh my God, I think your boyfriend's really cool. Like, tell yeah. me more.
Yep.
Totally. He is really cool. Or what they're wearing. But, you know, they're all vintage shopping, vintage LP buying people like I was. So yeah. we do have that in common
exactly.
already.
Yeah. Well, and maybe part of that is because they knew you their entire lives, which is kind of cool.
I think we're all bonkers and all those people should meet each other and leave the other people alone.
I do think like there's an interesting thing too when you're dealing with people who are their own kids are slightly around your age. So these next two questions are very related to this topic. So we're going to hear them back to back. This first one is a joint question from Austin and Emily. Love it. Have never seen this before. Great. And Melody's going to read it.
Maybe we could talk about ways it's potentially awkward to be friends with older people who have kids who are your age, especially if they have fraught relationships with those kids. How can you maybe be friends with the kids that are your age and also be friends with their parents, especially if you were friends with the parents first? And this wasn't a like, oh, let me set you up being friends with my kids. It just happened organically.
And then the second question is from Tess.
I'm in my 50s and my friend Diane is in her 80s. Diane has a daughter in my age range who lives nearby. They do spend time together, but there is some tension in their relationship. With the rise of people being estranged from their parents based on old or current grievances, can you talk about how intergenerational friendships are able to sidestep that tension? I don't have any baggage with Diane, so it's easy for me to take her at face value and just enjoy time with her now.
Where do you want to start here?
I will say that with my 100-year-old friend, I am good friends also with her nephew, mm-hmm. who is the person who takes care of her. And for the past 20 years, we often sit and share a bottle of wine and talk about taking care of her.
Yeah.
But again, he's her nephew, so it is a less complicated relationship in many ways.
Yes.
Wouldn't be everyone's favorite conversation to have with the new young daughter substitute.
I have a really interesting situation here about four of the great friendships of my recent life. So 2022, I went on a bike trip with my partner, and on this trip, we met two couples. They are all now in their mid-60s, and every year since then, we've gone on another bike trip, we've gone on other trips, we like go to see them, they live in Marin in California. And like, this is an incredibly important friendship group to me now. Like I have enriched my lives and have become incredible traveling partners. And in part because they are semi-retired, so they can travel when we travel, which is like September, right? When everyone else is doing back to school. But they're also just like so fun and interesting and political and cool. And they have kids who are around like 7 to 8 years younger than my partner and I. And I've never met them, but like there was like a little bit of suspicion on the kids' part that has been related to us by their parents of like, why are you hanging out with these young people? Like, why are these young people hanging out with you? There's like almost suspicion,
yeah.
kind-hearted. And they didn't think that like we were, I don't know, exploiting them or trying to like get their passwords.
Get in their will.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but like it is like someday we will meet them, I'm sure, at like a 70th birthday party or something like that. And it will be really fascinating. But for me, it is a way to have someone, you know, they're all slightly younger than like 5 to 10 years younger than my parents. It is a way of having this lovely textured relationship and wisdom and like bond that isn't with my parents. Like, I think that's important. I don't think it's necessarily trying to like heal a wound. It's just trying to develop more people in your life who love you.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, I'm thinking about my friends and I think that I have a more complicated relationship to my parents aging than I do to these older friends aging, mm. because I'm like, I'll be right there. You can totally lean on my arm the whole time down this rickety stairs. Yeah. Let me get your phone for you. I think if my mom asked me to get her phone for her constantly, I don't know. I'd be like, wear it around your neck, lady. You know?
Yes. Right.
I don't mind with my other friends somehow because it's less complicated. And I don't have that fear of like, I don't want my mom to change.
Yeah.
But what it's an honor to watch these friends change in a different way.
Yeah. And I do like the feeling that you're choosing this relationship is somehow, I think, can be really special. And I'm not saying that like every parent-child relationship is one of obligation or responsibility. But sometimes, I mean, that's just part of it. Like that just sometimes is like a thing. And you do have all of your past interactions and your past patterns. And that can be true of friendship as well. But it, like, especially friendships later in your life with people, like it can be, it just doesn't have that baggage in a really lovely way, I think.
Yeah, or even the hard conversations that kids have to have where they're like, you know, dad, you're going to have to move into a different house that with different levels. And like, if my friend wants to live in her crazy villa, I'm like, all right, good luck.
I'll come visit you.
I'll come visit. Watch it down the stairs. I mean, I don't need to say that, right? Okay. Yeah. Yes. It doesn't have the same sense of dire responsibility. It's, I'm there to support in the ways I can, but I'm also supporting my friends' decisions.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting question. Yeah.
It is a really interesting question. And I think like sometimes we try to put friendships into different categories and like, is this a friendship trying to duplicate, you know, my friendship with my mom that I don't have or whatever it is. And they don't have to be categorized. They can just be. So to close, I would love just to maybe if you can describe a really wonderful memory that you have of any intergenerational friendship.
I think there's a character in my novel, Oscar, who is based a little bit on my friend Max, who passed a while ago. Mm. And I remember sitting with him on a Tuscan hill eating cheese. And he said, ah, cheese. How I love it so. My heart gave out a few years ago, and my doctor said I had to choose between sex and cheese. And Andy, I chose cheese. And I thought, that has such nutty wisdom in it. I just love that he chose cheese.
If people want to find more of you on the internet, where can they find you?
Certainly Instagram, yes. A.S. Greer. That's where you'll find me most ridiculously.
And give us another pitch for the book for us to close.
Yes. You can also, I'm on tour very soon.
Yes.
So catch me across the country. You can find that on my website, andrewgreer.com, which I've had since 1999. That's how old I am. I got ahead of all the other Andrew Greers born afterwards. But it's, you know, I think it's a sunny and I hope delightful novel. And it has a little romance and some mystery and some criminal behavior because the people we know have a large, deeper past than we think.
It is wonderfully diverting. I cannot recommend it enough. It's perfect for this season and all seasons. So thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Culture Study Podcast. Today, paid subscribers got a bonus conversation between Melody and me about how to make friends with people who have similar interests when all of your current friends do not have those same interests. Trust me, it's on point. So if you want to support the show and be sure you always get that bonus content, head to patreon.com/culturestudy. It's $5 a month or $50 a year, and you'll get ad-free episodes, an exclusive advice time segment, and weekly discussion threads for each episode. You'll also get access to the bonus episode that we released earlier this week, all about off-campus. Be sure to follow the show wherever you get your podcasts, because we have so many great episodes in the works, and I promise you don't want to miss any of them. If you want to suggest a topic, ask a question about the culture that surrounds you, or submit a question for our subscriber-only Advice Time segment, go to our Google form at tinyurl.com/culturestudypod, or check the show notes for a link. The Culture Study Podcast is produced by me, Anne Helen Peterson, and Melody Rowell. Our music is by Poddington Bear. You can find me on Instagram at Anne Helen Peterson, Melody at Melodious47, and the show, which I promise I'm using the Instagram account now, at Culture Study Pod.